Hello, welcome to day four of the Harvey Weinstein Trial Unfiltered podcast. We're at day four of the trial.
Big day today.
Big day today.
Yeah.
It's actually
very significant day.
This is his first criminal accuser.
Yeah.
Actual criminal act accuser.
Yeah, this is very serious.
Annabella Sciarra, who was the Sopranos actress who dominated last week's evidence, although she alleged rape by Harvey Weinstein, she is not actually, the attack on her, the alleged attack on her is not actually on the criminal docket, because I think it's statute of limitations. So today he was actually listening to someone, the jury were listening to someone who he's been charged with sexually assaulting.
So it's Miriam Haley. Her name is Miriam Haley. That's who we heard from today. Yeah. And as film says, like, this is, you know, this is really the serious stuff.
This is the hard stuff, yeah.
This is the hard stuff because this is, you know, this is what potentially could send him to jail forever. Yeah. And the day started off strong, I think, for the prosecution.
Yeah, and then I think then it flipped in the afternoon.
For sure.
But first of all, let's just remind you what the Harvey Weinstein trial is all about. I think by the end of this podcast, we'll probably end up automatically pronouncing the name Harvey Weinstein.
Correctly. So basically, this is a case that, you know, that basically launched the Me Too movement. Movie producer Harvey Weinstein faces two charges of rape and one of a criminal sex act concerning two separate women. He also faces two charges of predatory sexual assault, which carry a possible life sentence. So very serious stuff.
So it's only two women that he's charged with assaulting. Four other women are giving evidence about attacks that he's not been charged with, but their evidence has been used to show a predatory...
Prior bad acts.
And a predatory sexual nature. And that's where the big bucks come in. That's where he gets the possible life sentence. So that's, you know...
So Miriam Haley came on today, and she's 40 years old now.
Yes.
She met him when she was in her 20s, but we heard that she was born in London, was brought up in Stockholm, Sweden, in a home with her father was missing her in action, I think, and then she had a stepfather who was frequently abusive to her and her mother. And this was significant, and I think they were mentioning
allegedly
this.
Allegedly significant.
Because they were saying that basically this again went to call more about Harvey Weinstein, that he preyed on people who were vulnerable. And so this is, you know, that
he
she
no
and that she was
figure.
And that she had no father figure, and so that this is what, you know, so we...
I have to say now, it's one of their weaker aspects of the case that it's almost like blaming Harvey Weinstein for them having bad family backgrounds, and therefore he shouldn't have tried to have sex with them or pursue them. And it's, you know, it's not their strongest suit. And there's a number of aspects of this case where the prosecution, I think they should just drop those. Is she really going out with him? Prosecution strategy where they literally say, you know, Harvey Weinstein is so fat and so gross and so sloppy that no sensible woman.
It's very weird.
No sensible woman in her 20s or 30s would have sex with him by consent, you know, so therefore it must be rape. So we heard that in 2006, Miss Haley was down in her luck. Her mentor and her boss had become ill. He was Michael White. Some people might know him. He produced Rocky Horror Picture Show, some great movies like that. And he had become ill, very ill. She was down in her luck. And as she said, she'd lost everything. She was financially insecure. She was drained. She wasn't close to her family. When she met Harvey Weinstein at a boat party in Cannes, he invited her to the Weinstein office, which is in the Majestic Hotel in Cannes. And she says when she arrived at the suite, which was as a hotel suite, doubling as an office, the meeting took a bizarre turn. So let's hear the bizarre turn that happened in her first, she says, happened in her first meeting with Harvey Weinstein.
I was basically asking if there was anything I can do on any of his productions in New York. And he said, let me think about it. Come and see me at the office, basically, which was like a hotel room that the Weinstein Company office had at the film festival.
Where were you when you had that conversation with the defendant?
I'm not actually sure. I believe it was perhaps on a boat, at a boat party. Yeah, because there are quite a few boat parties at Cannes, and I got that in my calendar on the day, that day.
Did you follow up with his offer to meet at the Weinstein offices in Cannes?
I did.
Where was that office suite located in Cannes?
It was at the Majestic Hotel on La Crescette. Yeah.
Was it odd for you to meet people when you were networking at hotel suites in Cannes?
Not at all. That is where all the film companies set up for the festivals. It is, in fact, I don't think it was the hotel he was personally staying in.
When you got to the hotel, describe for the jury what happened.
Well, I met with an assistant downstairs who took me upstairs to meet with Mr. Weinstein. The assistant let me inside of the room, the suite, and left. And so we just greeted each other normally and so forth and had a few, like a regular exchange of, you know, greetings. And I cannot remember the exact conversation from there on, but all of a sudden, eventually, it turned into him asking if I did massages and if I could give him a massage. And I declined and said perhaps he should contact the front desk and organize one. And then he proceeded to ask me whether he could give me a massage, and I declined. And
after you declined the massage, what happened?
Again, that is the part of the conversation that I remember mostly. But I basically left shortly after, and I didn't think anything would come out of that meeting.
Before we go on, I want to take you back to that room. When you got into the suite, was there anybody else in the suite besides the defendant?
No. Well, when I was taken inside, I was taken with an assistant, but the assistant left.
Where did you and the defendant go to have that conversation that you described?
It was in the hotel suite.
What room of the hotel suite?
The main kind of lounge area.
How was the defendant dressed at that time?
I don't remember.
And I know you said you did not remember specifics of the initial conversation. Do you remember what the content was?
Well, I mean, I was there to try and see if I could help him with production-wise, because I was going to New York and I was interested in experiencing some work. Production work here.
And did you allow him to give you a massage?
No.
Did you give him a massage?
No.
Did you touch him in any way?
No.
Had he made any comments about your appearance prior to you going to that meeting?
Not that I recall. And so I know that he instead commented on my appearance, and then I remember the massage stuff.
When you say commented on your appearance, do you remember anything specifically?
Yes. I remember that he said something about my legs, which I thought was odd.
What about his appearance and the way he dressed?
I mean, nothing in particular. He dressed just normal.
Great, we can cut and move on.
Can you describe to the jury what his demeanor was like when you initially arrived to the hotel room?
It was normal, friendly.
And how at all did his demeanor change when he began requesting a massage?
Well, he was still friendly. It was just inappropriate and humiliating. He asked me for massages. I had been quite excited to go and see him. And
at that time when you met him in 2006, how tall were you?
I think 5'5".
And how much did you weigh at that time?
Probably 110, 15.
Describe for the jury how you felt when you left the hotel room that afternoon.
Humiliated. I was extremely humiliated and just felt very stupid that I had been so excited to go and see him and that he treated me that way. And I was just very, yeah. And I was crying also when I left the hotel. I waited until I was kind of out of the hotel. Then I burst into tears.
By the way, what time did that meeting take place, if you recall?
In the afternoon. I think it was 2 p.m.
Did you have any interest in Harvey Weinstein romantically?
None at all, no.
Did you have any interest in Harvey Weinstein sexually?
None at all, no.
Did you act interested in him sexually or romantically in any way?
No, not at all, no.
Had you exchanged contact information with the defendant during that initial meeting?
I did, yes.
What type of contact information had you exchanged?
I believe phone numbers, and he gave me a contact, or either he said he was contacting somebody, but I'm not sure whether that is when I met him or after at the Weinstein Company, the producer of Project Runway.
So, a contact of somebody that works for him?
Correct.
Do you remember?
But I'm not 100% sure it was on that occasion or it was after I already left.
So then, you know, after this massage incident, alleged massage incident, Miriam tells the court that, you know, she was very surprised that there was a follow-up and that she did get a job working on Project Runway in New York as a kind of runner and a production assistant, you know, which is quite a good job. Now, it was paid $125 a day. And interestingly, and this came up later, she was working illegally on a tourist visa. She lived with a friend in the East Village and as well, you know, and lived also with a dog called Peanut and a cat. Now, we don't know the name of the cat, but bizarrely, the prosecution produced a photograph of Peanut the dog and went through this whole rigmarole of the court to admit Peanut's picture as an exhibit in this trial for no apparent reason. Maybe it'll come up later. Maybe Peanut bit Weinstein or something like that, or you know, who knows. So then they had a second very professional meeting in the Mercer Hotel.
That was after she finished the job, and actually he complimented her and it was very professional apparently, and he said that she had been fabulous on the set and that really everyone had really liked her.
She said he was charming and funny.
And he gave her a present of Tender as the Night by F. Scott Fitzgerald.
Yes, it reminds me of Bill Clinton. Actually, he used to give his women books and
not Scott Fitzgerald though, but yeah,
yes. But it's not. Who was it? Walt Whitman.
It was Walt. I think it was. Yeah,
That's how Hillary knew he definitely had cheated on her with Monica Lewinsky, because he'd given her the same book as he had given to Hillary when they were dating.
So not long after that, he phones or buzzes or says he's outside. She can't remember which. But he comes to her apartment in the East Village and, you know, barges in basically. And, you know, there's a whole load of things that come up with that. But basically, he's insisting that she go to Paris with him, that he really wants her to go to Paris. There's a fashion show. And, you know, she doesn't know what to do to try and make him stop that. She tells the court, and then she says, you know, the thing that really worked was she looked at him and says, you know, I've heard you've a terrible reputation with women. And apparently that shook him up hugely, and he backed off big time and kind of got out of there.
Appeared to lose interest, yeah. So then she says he invited her to the Clerks 2 premiere in Los Angeles, and she agreed to go, because she said it was different than going to Paris, which, you know, let's see. And then she says she was invited to his Soho apartment where she was sexually assaulted. This is the crime that he is facing. Her account of this came in for some tough questioning by Weinstein's defense counsel. But for now, let's hear her account. We should point out this is a reenactment by actors of verbatim transcripts.
And it is a little bit tough to listen to at times. Yes, so be warned.
This one is particularly tough. I think there's some pretty bad details in it.
Let's hear this now.
This is actors reenacting the transcripts of Miriam Haley describing being questioned by the assistant district attorney Megan Hast about her alleged assault by Harvey Weinstein.
Directing your attention to the day before you went to L.A., so July 10th of 2006, did you have a conversation or a meeting with Harvey Weinstein on that day?
With him or his assistant, yes.
Can you describe that?
Well, he suggested I come and see him at his apartment in Soho.
And did you agree to do that?
I did.
And why?
I had no reason not to. It would have been odd to decline when I had accepted to go to L.A.
What was your understanding of why you were going to the apartment?
I didn't know, to be honest. I just went to stop by to say hi. I didn't think it was a huge deal.
Did you see on your calendar any indication of meeting with Harvey Weinstein on that day?
Yes. So at the bottom of 10th of July, it says HW.
Do you recall where his apartment was located?
It was in Soho.
How did you get there?
He sent a driver to pick me up. I believe it was early evening or late afternoon. So we arrived at the apartment, and he, the driver, took me upstairs in an elevator. An elevator that went straight into the apartment or the loft. And once upstairs, Harvey was there and greeted me, and the driver left.
Was there anybody else in the apartment besides the defendant when you got in?
No.
Do you recall how the defendant was dressed?
I have a recollection of him wearing just a casual kind of shirt, maybe perhaps white or light-colored shirt and trousers.
Do you recall how you were dressed?
I don't.
Describe the defendant's demeanor when you arrived at the apartment.
He was friendly, normal. He greeted me.
And what happened?
He greeted me, invited me in, asked me if I wanted anything to drink, and I believe the television was on, and we were just having a normal exchange and sat down on the sofa.
And where were you seated on the sofa?
Just on the sofa, on one side, and he was on the other.
And so what was the distance between he and you at that?
A couple of feet.
What was that?
A couple of feet, maybe. 2 or 3.
Describe what happened next.
We were having a normal conversations. Television was on. We were sort of watching it a little bit, half in between the conversations. And then at some point, fairly soon into me being there, he came towards me and lunged at me, sort of trying to kiss me.
Up to the point where he lunged at you, had you had any conversations of a sexual nature?
No.
Any conversations of a romantic nature?
No. He would say things, yes.
At the point in the apartment while you were sitting on the couch having a conversation?
No.
Did that conversation involve anything of a sexual nature?
No.
Did that conversation involve anything of a romantic nature?
No. I mean, I don't recall that.
So then describe what happened at the point he lunges.
Well, I got up from the sofa and I said, oh, no, 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 no. I just kind of tried to reject him and push him away, and he would just pull me back and keep kissing and fondling me. And I got up and I tried to walk away from him, but he pulled me towards him and he was sort of walking towards me. And I was walking backwards trying to get away, but he would just come at me.
What happened next?
So as I'm trying to get away from him, he just insists and pulls me towards him while sort of walking into me. And I walked backwards. He kind of led me. It's hard to explain. He was coming towards me physically, and I was backed into a bedroom that was on the corner of that open space area through the door.
What happened next?
I walked backward because he was pushing me with his body until I got to the bed, and I fell backward onto the bed, and I tried to get up, and he pushed me down.
What happened next?
I had expressed during this entire time that I didn't want to have any, I just said, no, 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 I don't want this to happen. This is not going to happen. I'm on my period, is what I said next as well. That was not why it was not going to happen, but I was just trying to tell him everything to make him stop.
Were you actually on your period?
I was.
Continue.
And so I tried to reject him. I mean, I did reject him, but he insisted, and every time I tried to get up off the bed, he would push me back and hold me down with his arms. He pushed me down, he held me down by my arms, and no, stay like that. And I said, no, no. And at that point, started realizing what was actually happening, and I'm being raped.
Do you remember sort of what was going through your mind at that point?
Yes.
Can you describe that? Take a break if you need it. Have a sip of water whenever you're ready to continue.
To some degree, I mean,
Could you describe what you remember for the jury?
When I realized what was actually happening, I started weighing up my options in my head. And I thought, okay, I'm not able to get away from him physically. So I thought if I escalate this, if I scream rape, will someone hear me? If I start kicking even harder, will I have a chance to get away from him? And will I be able to get to the elevator, wait for the elevator, down the elevator, out into the street without him catching me? And if I do get all the way downstairs, is the driver in on it? Will he be there standing guard, ready to scoop me up if I get that far? And I couldn't even get away from him at all, let alone get out of the apartment. So ultimately, after a while, I just checked out and decided to endure it. That was the safest thing for me to do at that point.
What happened next?
He held me down on the bed and he forced himself on me orally. I was on my period. I had a tampon in there. I mean, I was mortified.
So what did he do?
He forced himself on me orally. He put his mouth on my vagina.
And what, if anything, did you do or say at that point?
I was just crying, no.
Did he do anything else at that point?
I kept trying to tell him, no, don't go there, don't do that. I said, I'm on my period, I have a tampon in there, and it was as if he didn't believe me. And something like, well, where is it then? Like that. And he literally pulled my tampon out.
Did he continue placing his mouth on your vagina after that?
Yes. But I don't really... Honestly, I was in so much shock at the time that I just checked out.
What is the next thing that you remember happening?
At that point, I don't remember much, except when I left the apartment, I remember walking out of the building and looking to see if the driver was there, the way I had thought.
Do you remember the defendant saying anything at any point after he made the comment about the tampon?
No.
And when you got downstairs, did you see the driver?
No.
What did you do?
I just went home. But I felt relieved that I did not see the driver because a part of me was like, maybe it is not that organized. Maybe he's not that crazy. Maybe...
So, you know, it's a pretty shocking account that we just heard there. And she says that she did tell a friend about the assault. She said she didn't tell the police because she was in the U.S. on a visa and she didn't want the police involved. On a tourist visa. She had obviously worked illegally on Project Runway and that was something that concerned her. And so she you know, didn't want to raise any questions about her visa status. But she says that, you know, after this alleged assault, she went to Los Angeles on a trip that paid for by Harvey Weinstein, went for 2 weeks to see her friend was having a baby, and she went for two weeks over there.
So then her account of her interactions with Harvey Weinstein turned bizarre. So despite being the victim of this alleged violent sexual assault, 2 weeks beforehand, she then agreed, when she came back from LA, to meet him at the Tribeca Hotel, you know, and to quote, he was very persistent and convinced me to meet him. So let's hear this, her account of the second interaction, where, according to Miss Haley, she then has a consensual sexual encounter with the guy who sexually assaulted her 2 weeks earlier. Some listeners, again, may find this account graphic. These are actors reenacting the actual dialogue, the actual transcript.
Exactly.
You know, so let's hear that account.
Did you hear from the defendant when you returned to New York City?
When I returned or before, but I do not remember the conversation.
Do you recall what the substance of the conversation was?
I don't remember the conversation, but he would have asked me to come. At some point, he asked me to come and meet him again.
And where did he ask you to meet him?
At the Tribeca Grand Hotel.
What was your understanding of that meeting or where that meeting was to take place?
Well, I believed I was going to go there and meet him, but it was not made clear to me that it would be in a room or anything like that. He was just there. I assumed it would be at the Mercer downstairs.
How were you dealing with the incident from July 10th, 2006, personally at that point?
I was still trying to make sense of what that even was. I was trying to make sense of what had happened, why it had happened. And I felt very trapped in not being able to really do anything about it because I did not want to go to the police because of my own situation. And yes, I was not sure how to handle it.
Did you go to the Tribeca Hotel to meet with the defendant?
I agreed to meet him, yes.
Did you see a marking in your calendar with respect to that meeting as well?
I believe it is in there, yes.
Did you have an appointment following that as well?
Yes, I was going to dinner with a friend.
Do you recall how you were feeling when you were walking to the hotel?
I remember thinking, I'm kind of trying to keep some sort of... I feel like I was trying to regain some sort of power or something. But I looked down at my shoes and I thought, oh my God, I just look like such a hobo.
What happened when you got to the Tribeca Hotel?
I actually don't recall whether an assistant took me upstairs or whether the front desk sent me upstairs, but I was one way or the other sent to meet him in a room inside.
What happened when you got in the room?
Almost instantly, he basically just took my hand like that and just pulled me towards the bed.
Do you remember much of what happened at that point?
At that point, well, I just thought, well, I just went numb. And I just thought, here we go again, type of thing. And I just felt like an idiot.
Can you tell the jury why you felt that way?
Because I had made it so clear and fought him off and made it very, very clear that I was not interested in him. And he had managed to convince me to meet him again, just to do something like that to me again. And I felt like an idiot for... I don't recall exactly how I was feeling, except I was having believed whatever he was saying, even though I do not remember the conversations.
Do you recall anything about what happened?
Yes, he pulled or led me onto the bed, and I didn't resist physically. I just laid there.
What did he do?
He had intercourse with me.
Do you recall anything about withdrawn? Was anything being said between him and you?
He said things like something about... He said something like, you are a whore and a bitch, but I think in a way which he thought that was going to somehow turn me on, I was like motionless and just saying, I'm not a bitch. I'm not a whore.
Do you recall anything about how you were feeling at that point?
I was feeling very... I mean, I was just... I felt numb. I felt numb. I felt like an idiot, and I felt numb.
Did you go to dinner with your friend that night?
I don't recall.
Did you tell anybody about what happened after that second encounter?
I don't think so.
Why not?
It was deeply embarrassing.
How did you feel about yourself following that encounter?
It was just embarrassing. I was embarrassed.
Did you blame yourself?
For that time, I did, yes.
Just describe that.
Well, the first incident was deeply embarrassing, but I didn't blame myself. The second time, I had not struggled, and I had gone there, and I blamed myself.
Did you want to have sex with Harvey Weinstein that night?
No.
Did you do anything that would make him think you wanted to have sex with him that night?
No.
Did you return to London shortly after that incident?
I don't remember. According to my calendar, soon after, yes.
Do you see a notation in your calendar regarding your flight from New York to London?
Yes.
How did you decide to deal with the defendant following those interactions that you describe once you had returned to London?
Honestly, I didn't know how to deal with it, so I just... It is almost like I just put it away in a box and pretended like it didn't happen. Just carried on as usual.
In carrying on as usual, what did that mean with respect to the defendant?
I carried on relating to him exactly the way I had before anything happened.
And how was that?
I was looking to have a regular kind of professional connection to him.
So after this, she was asked, how did she cope or what did she do? What was her strategy? And she said, she tried to put all this in a box, that carry on business as usual. And it really was business as usual because she would phone Harvey Weinstein for advice. She would pass on scripts of friends. He was a big Hollywood producer. So she really was involved in business with him. And, you know, then it was time for cross-examination where a lot of these allegations would be put under scrutiny from Damon Sharonis, Weinstein's lawyer. And he started off, funny enough, in 2008, rather than, tackling, immediately the assault or anything. He said, I suppose it made sense in some ways because, by 2008, a lot had happened. And he looked at an email that she'd sent him in 2008, which, was friendly, upbeat. And she signed, "Lots of love, Miriam." So, she wrote this email to the man who had seriously sexually assaulted her. So let's hear that exchange, the "Lots of love, Miriam" email.
If you look at this email, it says, "Hi, Harvey. How are you? Great to see you in Cannes." Correct?
Mm-hmm.
Am I right?
Yes.
You did see him, right?
Yes.
When you saw him, you approached him, talked to him?
I would presume so from this email, but I do not remember the exact meeting.
That was 2 years after, approximately, the incident at the Soho apartment, correct?
Yes.
And we've already gone through some phone records. You at least called him once while he was in Cannes in 2008.
Yes.
The email you sent to him, "Hi, Harvey. How are you? Great to see you."
Yes.
Those were your words you chose to put onto the paper.
Yes.
You said, "I noticed an article in today's New York Post about the Addams Family being turned into a play, musical."
Yes.
Because after you saw Harvey, you read the New York Post, and there was an article in there about that very thing, correct? That would make sense.
Yes.
Then you signed it. How did you sign that to Mr. Weinstein?
"Lots of love,
Miriam. Lots of love.
Lots of love, Miriam."
Now, the meeting you are referring to, the Mercer Bar, you testified about that in front of this jury earlier today, correct?
Yes.
That was the same summer you met Mr. Weinstein, wasn't it?
Yes.
The same summer you worked at Project Runway?
Yes.
That was also the same summer where you told this jury you were sexually assaulted by Mr. Weinstein, correct?
Yes.
And when you read that article, you started to reminisce about that meeting at the Mercer, didn't you?
Yes, but...
That is what you sent him. That email.
Yes.
You signed it. "Lots of love."
Yes.
Sharonis then went back and, dug into the whole, allegations of what had happened at, regarding the sexual liaison at the Tribeca Hotel.
That's the one that she says was consensual, although she kind of was consensual-ish, but he's not being charged with any crime there. She said she willingly went to his room and had sex with him.
This is basically two weeks after.
She was allegedly violently assaulted by Harvey Weinstein. So,
and she talked about during that sexual liaison, she talked about him calling her awful names, calling her a bitch, calling her a whore. And Sharonis was very, very tough on this because he was pointing out that actually when she went public in 2017, and she went very public, I mean, she gave press conferences,
she was on MSNBC, she was on Megyn Kelly,
she was on Today Show, she was all kinds of shows. And
Glory
she
Allred.
had a prepared statement that she'd worked on with Gloria Allred. And despite all of those different appearances and all those different iterations of her story, she had never mentioned the whore bitch scenario.
Yes.
So he was very hard on her on that. Let's hear that questioning now.
Now, I think that what you told the members of the jury was that he had sex with you while you were there.
Correct.
Ma'am, did you take your clothes off? Did he take your clothes off? Do you recall?
I don't recall.
And you told this jury that Harvey Weinstein said pretty horrible things to you, right?
Yes, correct.
You used the word bitch, or you said he did.
Yeah. Yes, well, yes.
Okay. You spoke to the prosecutors in the June of 2018, correct?
Yes.
And it was one of the first times you spoke to, at least the prosecutors, not your lawyer, but the prosecutors, right?
Yes.
And when you spoke to the prosecutors in June of 2018, they asked you questions, not only about July the 10th, but they asked you questions about July the 26th, correct?
Correct.
And when they asked you questions about July the 26th and what happened with Harvey Weinstein at that hotel, you told them that, I don't remember the situation. I don't remember the meeting. Didn't you?
I don't remember saying that.
You don't remember saying that?
No, I don't.
You certainly didn't tell the DAs in June of 2018 that Mr. Weinstein called you those names, did you?
No, I think that is something that I remembered later, because I focused in more on that particular...
You remembered that later?
Yes.
So by the time you had spoken to the DAs, ma'am, you had already done a press conference, correct?
Yes.
You had already appeared on to the Megyn Kelly show, correct?
Yes.
You had already appeared a ton on MSNBC, correct?
Yes.
And it is your testimony that after that, when you spoke to the DAs, you still hadn't remembered that Mr. Weinstein called you those names and treated you that way.
I had not been focusing on that incident at that point. And it was a very long time ago, so I wasn't really remembering as much. And then, because I was focusing more on that later, I remembered more.
So everything was a very long time ago, correct? All of this.
Correct.
And
but some things stick out.
You didn't focus on the Tribeca situation when you spoke to the DAs in July of 2018?
Correct. But I did tell them about it, as far as I can recall.
She had the calendar. She had a calendar. But it was interesting because, you know, and we looked at lots of pages of her diary.
Yes.
But she obliterated a lot of things with
That's
pen
right.
marks. She did. That was one thing which caused difficulties. And obviously, Sharonis, I suppose the team had got some kind of an investigative technique where they were able to read what was underneath.
Read some of them.
And the other thing that happened, which was funny,
but, I mean,
which
this
was
is
interesting.
Her, but, I mean, I don't think he made a big enough point of it. This is her destroying evidence. You know, this is her obliterating evidence.
Well, she made the point that she does it all the time, that she that she wipes out things.
Yeah, but the ones who were able to read were all regarding Harvey Weinstein.
Yeah, that's true. But she also, the other thing that was kind of a bit damning was that some of these diary entries, which coincided with the time of this violent assault, had hearts. Loads and loads and loads of hearts. And I love. One part of it said, I love New York. I love stuff.
Yeah.
So there was this kind of hearts and stuff like that during this time when apparently she had been allegedly raped.
Mm.
But then I think Chernonis made a great kind of win when he talked to Miriam. And Miriam, you know, he said, look, you had said originally that you wanted to remain anonymous, that you were going to go to the authorities, but you were going to remain anonymous in 2017. But then you went ahead and hired Gloria Allred. And then, you know, there's this whole thing about, are you intending to sue Harvey Weinstein?
Yeah.
Let's listen to this section about Gloria Allred. It's really good.
And at first, did you say you wanted to remain anonymous?
I think that is confidential.
No, not to your lawyer. But did you want to remain anonymous?
Initially, I did.
You didn't want to tell anybody publicly about what you were alleging in this case, right?
I didn't want to be public initially, no. But I did want to lend my support.
Then you hired an attorney?
I retained an attorney, yes.
Did you pay this attorney?
No.
That attorney is Miss Allred, sitting in court now?
Correct.
And without getting into what you discussed with Miss Allred, you met with her, right?
Yes.
You held a press conference?
Yes.
And a press conference where it was very well attended by the press, wasn't it?
Yes.
And at that press conference, before the microphones came on, flashes were going everywhere, weren't they?
There were some photographers, yes.
Some. There were a lot, weren't there?
There were.
Miss Allred was sitting next to you?
Yes.
And prior to going to that press conference, you put together a prepared statement.
Correct.
You put together a prepared statement about your summer in 2006 with Mr. Weinstein.
Not completely correct.
Well, we will get to that. You put together a summary of your summer of 2006 with Mr. Weinstein?
No, not correct.
You talked about some of the allegations, didn't you?
I did.
Did you write that or your lawyer wrote that?
I wrote that.
And when you wrote that, you knew that is what you were going to read at the press conference, right?
Yes.
And you read it at the press conference, didn't you?
I read it, yes.
You attended a press conference.
I did.
You created a statement at that press conference.
I wrote a statement, yes.
And after that press conference was over, your lawyer, Gloria Allred, said she wanted more than an apology for Mr. Weinstein, didn't you?
She may have.
And you know that now, because Mr. Weinstein has been charged, the statute of limitations has been extended, and you can sue him. You know that.
I was not aware of any.
You didn't talk with your lawyer about that?
I have not.
So Chironas, during his questioning, established a fairly amazing timeline of events that, again, were not included when Miriam went public in 2017 with her alleged rape that happened on July the 10th, 2006. She apparently was raped on July the 10th, 2006. Mm-hmm. On July the 11th, she flew to Los Angeles. You know, we heard that already.
Paid for by Harvey
Weinstein for 2 weeks to spend time with her friend who's having a baby. And then she comes back, has this consensual sex with him in the Tribeca Hotel.
On the
26th. And then she writes, we saw the evidence of this. She had written in her diary, call Dan. So Dan is actually Harvey Weinstein's personal assistant. Call Dan to see if I can go to London. See if I can go to London. Then that's aggressively, it was super, super aggressively scored out.
She tried to obliterate that. And that was on the 31st. That was on the 31st. Timeline. She was raped on the 10th. She flew to LA for 2 weeks, I assume business class or first class, paid for by her alleged rapist. When she gets back, she has consensual sex with her alleged rapist
then
at
asks,
the Tribeca
can she
Hotel.
Go,
then
asks,
4 days later, phones the assistant to see if he can get a ticket to London.
And then she goes to London. So she goes to London on the 2nd of August, and you know we hear, you know, we even found out that she where she stayed. I'm gonna try and find that in my notes here. But you know, she goes to London, stays in a kind of a posh hotel there. But also interestingly, when she's in London, she finds out that there's a possibility maybe that that Harvey Weinstein will be there, and she writes an email saying, I believe that you're going to be in London. Yeah. I'm going to try and change my tickets to be there.
She's going to change her tickets to be there when you're there. The person who sexually assaulted
apparently.
Her.
Apparently, let's
few
hear
weeks
that.
Earlier.
Let's hear that.
Did you decide at that point to sever all ties with Mr. Weinstein?
I didn't decide anything. No.
Well, you certainly didn't sever ties with him, did you?
No, I didn't.
In fact, on September the 8th of 2006, you learn that Harvey Weinstein is in London, and you try to switch your flight in order to meet him in Dan Guando, correct?
No, not necessarily.
Is this an email that you sent to Dan Guando?
Yes.
Dan Guando, as we talked about, is Harvey Weinstein's assistant?
Yes.
And that's a true and accurate depiction of that email?
Yes.
And that's an email that you are sending to Dan. It says, "Hi Dan, how are you? So I'm back in London, and totally bummed to have missed you guys." Did I read that correctly?
Yes.
And the "you guys" that you are referring to are Dan and Harvey Weinstein, correct?
Yes.
And it says, "I tried to change my flight till Friday, but I couldn't. So if you are coming back anytime soon, please let me know. Also, it would be great to know when Catwalk might start shooting, if I have a spot. All the best, Miriam." Is that right?
Yes.
So that's you sending an email to Harvey's assistant saying that you are bummed to have missed them.
Yes.
And asking if there might be a catwalk spot available for you at some point.
Yes.
And you never got a catwalk spot, did you?
No. But it was... Yeah, no.
And you actually tried to change your flight in order to get there earlier to see Harvey Weinstein.
I'm not sure that that's true.
Is that what it says?
I may have said that, but I'm not sure that I actually tried to change my flight.
You may have been fibbing in the email?
Perhaps I might. I don't recall.
The man that you may have been changing your flight to see is the same man that you described on July 10th and July 26th, correct?
Correct.
And she admits to being in touch with him, as we said already, like for years, sending him scripts. And, you know, in 2007, she got in touch with him looking for tickets for to go and see Sicko in Cannes.
That's the Michael Moore documentary about healthcare.
You know, and she left a message that she was in town and, you know, and he asked, then he was like, they looked at the phone logs and there's a lot of back and forth between the two of them in Cannes. And then he asked, are you going to be in London? And then she writes back and says, I'm going to be in London for a few days and then I'm going to be starting a job in Miami. And then, you know, has this whole, you know, so there's this, very, again, very friendly kind of exchange that we heard about. So let's hear about that email.
Now, back in 2009, you had not seen Mr. Weinstein in at least a year, right? Or in February of 2009, you had not seen him since Cannes, June of 2008, right?
Correct.
And do you recall reaching out to Mr. Weinstein on February 25th of 2009 and asking him if he had a job or a runner position?
I remember having seen, yes, I have seen the email since.
Let me show it to you.
Thank you. I cannot remember exactly the date unless I see it.
Is that a true and accurate depiction of an email you sent to Harvey Weinstein?
Yes.
This is maybe one of the last communications you have with Mr. Weinstein via email?
Yes.
Dear Harvey, on May 25th of 2009, I have not seen you in so long. How are you? Listen, I'm saving up to become a Kundalini yoga teacher. I just wanted to announce myself available for work if you happen to, by any chance, have anything shooting in London. Did I read it correctly?
Correct.
I'll be a runner, whatever. I really appreciate any lead. My cat needs feeding.
Correct.
Either way, I hope you are super well. Peace and love, Miriam.
Correct.
So, in 2009, when you sat down at your computer or typed it on your phone again, you had options to not send that email to Mr. Weinstein, correct?
Absolutely.
And you had options on how to sign that email, correct?
Correct.
That is what you would consider a friendly email, asking for a job if possible?
Correct.
And at that point in 2009, Mr. Weinstein didn't have any hold over you. You did not live in the same country, did you?
No.
You had no connection to him whatsoever?
No.
Right?
No.
That is the email you sent him?
Yes.
And did he respond to that email?
No.
So I think one of the worst emails, Phelan, is the one from February 2009.
Yes.
You know, and again, we remind, you know, the audience that this is a person who is trying to put Harvey Weinstein in prison forever for raping her, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
So in February 2009, she writes a letter to him, and what does she tell him, Phelan?
She's going to set up her own yoga business, a special kind of yoga business, and she's looking for, is it investors or clients?
Well, she's saying, look, I'm available for anything, and if you're around, let me know, and I'd be a runner. She says, you know, I'd be a runner or whatever, and by the way, my cat needs feeding, she says. Of course, we love the references to cats. And then she ends that by saying peace and love. And, you know, we've seen other emails. We saw emails today, other emails which said, you know, love, lots of love. She ends all her emails to Harvey Weinstein saying lots of love. Funny enough, when he writes back to her, he says best regards, which is much more, professional.
Yes.
But Sharonis, you know, so we had all of this extraordinary amount of damaging stuff. And then Sharonis summed up the whole line of defense questioning. He sums the whole thing up, recalling all of this stuff. And particularly he talks about, you know, that she had told her story, but he said, you didn't tell the whole story. Let's listen to that exchange.
When you went on your press conference, you knew the entire world was going to be seeing that, didn't you?
I did.
You knew that what you were going to say was going to affect Mr. Weinstein?
Yes.
And what you did was, you talked about the incident at the Majestic, right?
Correct.
You talked about the Paris rejection, right?
Correct.
And you talked about July 10th.
Correct.
That is all you talked about, right?
Yes.
And you didn't tell the world at that press conference in October of 2017 that, 2 weeks later, you were at the Tribeca Grand with Harvey Weinstein.
I did not.
You did not tell the world that he flew you to London 2 days after that, did you?
No, I didn't.
You didn't tell the world you pitched trash TV to Harvey Weinstein, did you?
May I just say that—
You didn't tell the world that, did you?
No.
You didn't tell the world that you met with him to pitch him other shows.
No.
You didn't tell the world you ran into him at Cannes and sent him a nice email.
No.
You didn't tell the world you tried to get a job from him in 2009.
No, I didn't.
What you told the world was what your lawyer referred to as her truth, correct?
Correct. And it was not her truth. And it is the truth, yes.
That is for somebody else to decide, ma'am. At the end of the day, you did not tell the world in October of 2017 the rest of the story, did you?
It was not relevant to the message that I was there to share.
Well, let's talk about that message.
Yeah.
What you did not want to share, were you worried about sharing the fact that you had this relationship with Mr. Weinstein? Were you worried about the fact that you had accepted tickets from him? Were you worried about telling the world that?
I was not. But it was not really relevant to the message I was there to share.
The truth is, in October of 2017, the reason you did not tell the world the rest of the story is because you knew they would have looked at you skeptically, right?
That is not true.
Okay. The truth of the matter is, you had a consensual relationship with Mr. Weinstein?
Not a sexual consensual, no.
The truth is, you had a friendship with Mr. Weinstein, as evidenced by all those emails, as evidenced how you reached out to him.
I considered him a professional and social acquaintance.
In 2015, 2014?
I had not seen him for a very long time. In 2014, I'm not sure.
He was still an acquaintance of yours?
I've not seen him or talked to him for a very long time.
Then in October of 2017?
Sorry.
You had not seen him in years. It was not in vogue to be friends with Harvey Weinstein anymore, was it? In October of 2017?
No.
No. You could not send him scripts anymore, could you?
I was not sending scripts because I was not working in that industry anymore.
2007 you did. 2009?
Yes, exactly. But not in 2017, or I don't know how 2014 was relevant.
And it is your testimony that you have no intentions of suing Harvey Weinstein?
I have no plans.
No plans?
Correct.
Is it a possibility?
Well, there is always the possibility, but I have no plans at this time.
So, when the district attorney asked you if you had any plans to sue Harvey Weinstein, you said no. But you say now it is a possibility?
I'm saying I don't have any plans at this time.
Objection.
But it is a possibility.
Anything is a possibility.
Today's podcast is produced by Unreported Story Society and Magdalena Segeda and Raquel Lerman of Theater Planners. Written and presented by Phelim McAleer and Anne McElhaney. Directed by Kif Scholl. Megan Hast is played by Kristen Connors. Miriam Halley is played by Alina Phelan. And Damon Sharonis is played by David Stanbrough. Edited by Mark Aramian. Engineered by Chris Gardner.